Hold now your cross before my closing eyes. Shine through the gloom and point me to the skies. Heaven's morning breaks and earth's vain shadows flee. In life, in death, O Lord, abide with me. On April 23rd, 1927, just before the players hit the football pitch for the final of the FA Cup in London, England, that hymn we just sung, Abide With Me, was sung unaccompanied by 92,000 people in the stands of Empire Stadium. 92,000 people, all knowing the words, all knowing the tune, singing with one voice this prayer for God to remain present through adversity. Initiated by a newspaper that was running a campaign to support communal singing, one participant in the stands that day described hearing the cry as an unforgettable and indescribable experience. Singing Abide With Me at the final of the FA Cup became a yearly tradition that continues to this day. But if you listen to the original BBC broadcast from 1927 and then the more recent iterations found on YouTube, you can see that it is now a starkly different experience. In the past, the crowd sung as one voice, but now it is literally one voice. What was once a deeply moving communal act has morphed into a performance with a featured artist coming out with a microphone to sing to a passive audience that has fewer and fewer people singing along each year. It is yet another example of the narrowing of human experience from the communal to the individual that we see playing out in so many aspects of life. From politics to culture, even to spirituality, we are increasingly being drawn to personalities, not participation, entertainment, not engagement. In this I do what I want world where more value is placed on what we consume than what we contribute, we have forgotten both figuratively and literally how to sing from the same hymn book. And as less and less people participate in organized religion, we have less and less connection to the foundational and shared stories that have given structure and comfort and meaning to people for centuries. These common affirmations of who we are and whose we are and what is important to us. Without these common stories, these shared songs, we can feel lost, adrift, aimlessly wandering in the wilderness of our own individuality with fewer and fewer resources to call upon in those times of adversity when the foundations of our lives shake and crumble. Without common stories, we can forget our common strength. Without shared songs, we can forget our shared identity as beloved children of the living God. I will take you to be my people, and I will be your God, and you shall know that I am the Lord your God who has brought you out of slavery in the land of Egypt. These words of God's liberating action and abiding presence, this is the foundational story of the Hebrew Scriptures. It is a story that gives structure and comfort and meaning. But as we heard in our Exodus text today, there are significant consequences when it is forgotten. We hear that after leading the Israelites to Mount Sinai, Moses had disappeared into the clouds on the mountaintop, and the people, awestruck, waited. They waited, and they waited, and they waited 40 days, we are told. And the more they waited, the more anxiety crept in. They became terrified of being stranded there in the wilderness, leaderless and alone. The God who had parted the waters and delivered manna from heaven and water from rocks now felt absent. The God who had promised presence now seemed too abstract, too distant, not tangible enough to satisfy the people's need as a figure of worship. Martin Luther wrote about this distinction between the revealed and hidden God, and how the hidden God becomes an item of speculation. When we feel alienated from God, that God is not active in our lives in the ways we want or the ways we expect, God becomes a source of frightening possibilities. When the frame of reference is only ourselves, in our times of anxiety, we tend to project the worst of ourselves onto God. That because we lash out when we are hurt, because we are judgmental and vengeful, we assume that's the way God acts too. The God of human speculation becomes too dangerous. And so we turn to gods of our own making, idols that we can fashion with our own hands and minds and manipulate to fit our own needs. Perhaps it is a golden calf. Perhaps it's a flag or a national anthem. Maybe it's money or power or influence or comfort. Maybe it's a sports hero or a pop star, or the strong man who says he's the only one that can solve our problems. Maybe the idol we worship is a drug, or the bottle, or the cell phone in our pocket. As John Calvin says, the human mind is a factory of idol making. The human mind is a factory of idol making, and every one of the idols we make is grounded in an ideology that puts our individual interests ahead of the living God and the well-being of others. The text from Exodus says that after fashioning the idol of gold, the people rose up to revel, singing and dancing to the God of their own creation, and there are consequences to this. Texts like this command us to consider the songs we sing and ask, are we giving voice to hope? Or are we giving voice to the mob? Are we singing our joy? Or are we baying for blood? Texts like this command us to consider the object of our worship and whether it will truly be able to deliver what it promises. Will those idols of our own creation really be there for us when the foundations of our lives shake and crumble? Hold thou thy cross before my closing eyes. Shine through the gloom and point me to the skies. Heaven's morning break and earth's vain shadows flee. In life, in death, O Lord, abide with me. As I mentioned a couple weeks ago, Paul wrote his letter to the Philippians while in chains in a Roman imperial prison, likely facing execution. Despite the very real prospect of his own death, his letter to the church is filled with hope in Christ. Even amidst the disagreement and division they are dealing with, the church is to rejoice together. Rejoice in the Lord always, he says. Again, I say rejoice. Let your gentleness be known to everyone. The Lord is near. Do not be anxious about anything. From within our individualistic culture, we may think of joy as a private overflow of good feeling in response to happy circumstances. But the true nature of joy, and what Paul understood, is that joy is not some happy, clappy, good times sentimentality. True joy takes root amidst adversity. Indeed, there is no other soil for it to grow in. Likewise, true joy is never performative. It is something we participate in. It is the natural outpouring that comes when we become aware of the blessings that have flown into our lives. And since joy is never fully realized unless it is shared, it is subversive. Tyrants fear joy because they can't control it. Plutocrats hate joy because they can't sell it. Warmongers shun joy because they can't exploit it. Here in the Church of Jesus Christ, joy is the song we sing because even in the most dire circumstances of life, in the hospital bed, in the prison cell, on the battlefield, that even in the face of the very worst we do to each other, violence and vengeance, even crucifixion on the cross, God's promises hold true. The songs we sing hold fast to the faith that through resurrection love we are never abandoned and we are not alone. Hold thou thy cross before my closing eyes. Shine through the gloom and point me to the skies. Heaven's morning breaks and earth's vain shadows flee. In life, in death, O God, abide with me. Like you, I'm sure, I've been watching what has been going on in Israel and Gaza these past days with horror. I really don't know what to say, and I certainly don't know what to do. All I see is tragedy, and my heart breaks for the people there, and the people here who have family and friends affected by the horrible events of the past week. I don't know what to say, and I don't know what to do. And any talk of joy feels like folly. And yet, in times such as these, I have, and we have, a common story to fall back on. We have these shared songs to sing. Even when the foundations of our lives shake and crumble, we have this path to walk alongside the one who said that the most important thing we can ever do in any time and in every place is to love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind and to love your neighbor as yourself. Love God. Love neighbor. How needed is that in our world right now? The stories we tell and the songs we sing matter. It is said that when we sing together, our hearts start to beat together. Even as this world gets more divided, when we sing together, we feel closer to each other. When our one individual voice blends into the collective voice, we are reminded that we are not alone and we don't have to do it all on our own. When we sing our faith together, we are a choir of God's beloved, vibrating at the same frequency and resonating through hundreds and thousands of years of spiritual tradition. When we sing our faith together, we sing for love and for sorrow and joy and the full breadth of human experience. We sing to summon communities and to change the world. Because when we bring our voices together and hear and feel what we can do together, we begin to wonder what else we might be able to do together. When our voices create beauty and harmony and a sense of peace, we are inspired to find other ways we can bring beauty and harmony and peace into our world. Faith demands participation, not performance. It is based on engagement, not entertainment. This is not a show. This is not a show. What we do together in this place is the countercultural and deeply subversive act of singing joy into the face of despair, and hope into the heart of hate, and life into the shadows of death. And these songs that we sing need all of our voices, all of our voices. Those of you here in person, those of you here at home, all of our voices are needed in the great song of faith. And we're going to embody this right now. As one community of Christ, we are going to sing from the same hymn book once again. If you are online, the words will come up on your screen, and if you are here, we're going to open up our hymn books and sing hymn 436, and we're just going to sing Abide With Me once again, this time just verses 1, 4, and 5. That's hymn 436, verses 1, 4, and 5. And when we do this, I want you to fully participate and give your whole self to this moment. I want you to feel with your body and your mind and your heart and your soul the joy that comes when we sing our faith together, when we turn ourselves over to each other and to the living God in this great choir of God's beloved.